I finna rip it.
Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I am your conductor, Joseph Ward, and as always, riding along with me, my good man, Mr. Patrick Irvin. What's going down, Pat?
Hey, Joe.
Huh?
From now on, when you do that, because I be trying to get my what up on the beat, so you got to give me that on the beat so that I can be like, yo, what up on, you know what I'm saying?
Nah.
How you doing, everybody?
Nah. All right, so today and moving forward, we got a new special guest host who's soon to be having his own Freedom Train podcast show, Mr. Jamie Bouchon. What's going down, Jamie?
What's going on, everybody? First of all, I just appreciate the opportunity, Pat, Joe, for let me get on here and chop up some game with you guys, and I'm excited about it. Let's do it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And what high school you went to?
Rickards High School, Southside. Hey,
man, y'all better know. If you don't know, you better go find out. Better Google it. So,
Joe.
Huh?
He is not a special guest co-star. Today?
He's special.
No, his introduction. He coming out. We popping his cherry.
All right, well, damn it, he here to stay. Jamie.
I'm here. What's happening? I'm here.
There it is. That good for you?
Yeah. That'll work.
There you go. Hey, folks, remember, the Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX, Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure y'all visit www.pactsinc.org. And make sure you visit our Freedom Train website while you're online, because you know you're going to be online. So visit www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about us and hear the playbacks of our shows and, you know, your favorite shows, just like this show and every other show should be your favorite show. And if you really want to be cool, like I tell you every week, make sure you follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain. And make sure you subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. Come right to your phone. You don't have to go searching for it. It'll come right to you. So, buckle your seatbelt, because we got a good one today. What you think, Pat? What you think, Jamie? We got a good one today, huh?
Yeah, man. I think we're going to go over a lot of good topics and chop up some real good game.
There it is. We are going to have Professor Carlton Jones to join us a little later in the show. He is the creator of the upcoming project, the Independence Day Project, which will be a documentary film that will be coming out either later on this year or early next year. And today we are going to actually get into a little into Professor Carlton Jones's vision as we try to articulate and create or give you the ideas of what we think an independent black community would look like. So myself, Pat, and Jamie, we're going to do our best to go over these themes and take you deeper into the professor's mind. And then when the professor gets on the show, he's going to tell us if we're right or wrong. So that's how we're going to do it today. So, Pat.
I'm going to take you deep into my mind because, yeah.
Why?
Because... You see, it's like this, right?
Uh-huh.
You shouldn't go chasing waterfalls. You should stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to, you see. And that's why I creep.
For real?
Yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, it makes sense. I feel you.
I appreciate that. All right.
So, gentlemen, an independent black community, when you hear that idea, that concept, of that topic of an independent black community, and Jamie, since you, we're gonna go ahead and pop the chair early, Jamie.
Hey,
can you give us?
On blast like that,
hey,
yo?
We ain't putting them on blast, man. He ready.
He
ready. But
he
just
ready.
Kind of, hey man, we got this.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm back.
This kind of, you know, when you hear the idea of the concept, when somebody says independent black community, Jamie, what are your thoughts, or what are the first things that come to your mind when you hear that independent black community?
When I hear independent black community, the first thing that comes to mind is access to resources.
Okay.
And I think once you can't be independent if you don't have access to those resources. So when I think of an independent black community, our own resources, our own economic base, and stuff we can actually build upon and call our own. Kind of like how you see the Jewish community in American society.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to necessarily go against or just mess with the Jewish community because they know they have resources they can tap into. So when I think of that independent black community, to me it's based on resources, stuff we can actually use to our own advantage.
Okay, okay. That's what's up. Tell me he ain't ready. Tell me, man, come on.
Hey, you know, that me and Jamie, we knew what we was doing. I wanted to, you know what I'm saying? So the crowd just got, you know, we knew what we was doing, Joe.
Yeah. All right, Pat, so when you hear independent black community, what's the first thing come to your mind?
Well, when I hear independent black community, first thing come to my mind right now is, first off, see, I'm going to use this analogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Chris Brown said these hoes ain't loyal, right?
Right.
And they not loyal necessarily to him or whatever, because they have other outlets and other things like that that they're utilizing to pay their bills and to provide substance and to live their life.
Mm-hmm.
So they're loyal to the things that give them subsistence. And if that's not you, then they not loyal to you. But if Chris Brown ever did meet a hoe that he provided all of her subsistence for, that he gave her everything that she needed and wanted to survive and to thrive and to enjoy life, then she would no longer be unloyal. So she would be a loyal hoe. And then by that standard, she's no longer a hoe either, because one of the prime caveats to being a hoe is being disloyal. So if you got a loyal hoe, you don't have a hoe. You just got a good freak. So that's what I think of when I think black community. I think right now we have to, like Jamie said, we got to get to a point where we're providing for ourselves in every last single facet of our lives for what we need to accomplish. And then we won't have to worry about our best and our brightest hoeing themselves out to other communities to survive.
Right, right. I was okay. You brought that back. I think.
Hold on, before we get to the next point, we gotta give it up for Pat for paralleling hoes in our natural state of what we're going through right now. I've never heard hoeing sound so complicated and complex and eloquent.
There you go.
There we go. Give it up for hoeing.
There you go. Hey man, you almost make it sound like it's a science behind it.
Yeah, there's a science behind it. Because I got my BS degree.
Right.
My degree in bullshit.
Right.
So, there it is. All right.
There it is. All right. So, so my opinion, and it parallels you all's opinion and Pat's great whole analogy. Because to me, like you said, economics, you have to have that economic base. You have to have an economic foundation. You have to be able to have real resources. You have to have real capital. You have to have something that's more tangible than what the hell we have now, right? Because just think about it right now. We keep talking about $1.7 trillion of buying power. That's not like real buying power, because we're not even together as a whole. So when I think about independence, I think about one of the first things that come to my mind is economics. Like, we have the money and the capital within the black community to actually provide ourselves with the most basic resources that we would need. It's kind of like when they was talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma was ready to do business with other countries. Like when your economy and your community is to the point where you're ready to do business with other countries, then you can free yourselves. I mean, like we don't need them for lights, for power, because we have the economics and the resources that we can provide ourselves with power. We can provide ourselves with water. We can provide ourselves with food. We can provide ourselves with protection. Everything that we need with the education, we have everything that we need, and we're providing it for ourselves. We're producing it ourselves. We're manufacturing it ourselves. Our money is circulating through our community, so we're using our money to free ourselves. Like we literally don't need anybody else for anything. Like literally, like right now we need so many other communities just to survive, just to get to the next day for our most basic needs. But in the independent black community, we don't need anybody for anything, from our most basic necessities to our most frivolous need. We could produce that ourselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I want to add the caveat that it's not to say that we don't still do trade with other communities and things like that. You know, you need networking.
Yeah.
And to some extent, you need allies and alliances. And to some extent, you're going to need to procure basic materials in order to turn them into the more lavish and wonderful items that we love. So it's not to say that we don't still do business with other people, but it is to say that if the community decided it was going to close itself off, everybody in the community should still be able to survive. Like,
right.
That shouldn't be a death sentence for the entire community.
Right, right. Well, see, all right, so we have the nine areas of human activity. So we have economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, war, and counter-war. War and counter-war that's the ninth. So we can let's kind of go through these and kind of give our ideas on how we can become independent within these areas. And let's start from the bottom up. So let's start with war and counter-war, because this is something, especially this. And I want to start here being that both of you have been in the military or is maybe still active in the military. So how can we use war or counter-war to free ourselves, or what has to go into this area for us to be able to even think about using war or counter-war to our advantage to help ourselves?
I'll take this one first. When I think of war counter war, it's not in the terms of necessarily picking up arms and going against mm-hmm. somebody. To me, it's more of a mind state. I think a lot of times people in the black community don't even realize we're in a state of war, that we're going against different communities, and they don't understand that. So first is kind of understanding strategies of war, understanding what you're up against, then combating from there once you get that kind of mentality. But are we ready to pick up arms and all that? That's kind of violence against violence. Of course not. And nobody mm-hmm. wants to go down that train. So I think it's more of getting into that mind state. You know, everybody else is playing chess, and, you know, we got to keep up with that too, but we got to learn how to, you know, think from a military aspect. So when I think of that, it's just getting that education, understand how to use people as allies. We ain't got to trust them. We don't have, like, these politicians that come in our communities. We just got to be able to know how to use these guys to get what we want, but that all comes to having that military state of mind and thinking. That's what I think of when I think of war, counter-war.
Mm-hmm. Pat?
I agree. When I think of war, I think of actual picking up arms and shooting people. Like, that's like the last thing to come to my mind when I think of war.
Right.
You have economic warfare, you have social
right.
warfare, you have political warfare, you have all of these other different forms of war that even nation to nation are often engaged before anybody even picks up a rifle. You know, that's where you start seeing the tariffs and the blockades and all the other things that they have going on, and the sanctions and the violations and blah, blah, blah. All of those various forms of war that don't involve somebody shooting somebody else in the head. So, like Jamie said, we have to begin to understand that we are at war. And even if we were on friendly terms necessarily with other communities and people and places, we still need to understand that from an economic standpoint, you're always in a state of war, if you will. You're always in a state of protecting your resources and assets while trying to gain more so that your community could be more comfortable. You're always in a state of protecting your best interests. You're always in a state of doing all these different things. So I think, like he said, we have to get in the mind state that we are at war. Now, us black people globally have to think about that a little bit differently because of our position on the socioeconomic ladder in various different ways and various different places. We can't do to white people a lot of the things that they can do to us.
Right.
And I'm going to just be blunt and say that. You got too many motherfuckers running around here not really respecting the situation that we're in or the power that they have. And that's not no coward shit to say that or nothing like that. But it's the truth. It is what it is. Now, that's not to say... So when I say that, what I mean is we have to get to a place where we acknowledge our position, we acknowledge the position of other communities, and then we begin to act and plan accordingly in terms of what's possible for us and what our long-term goals are. And again, that involves political warfare, which means local politics and things of that nature. That involves economic warfare. That means getting involved in the business or getting involved in the warfare of business, you know, getting involved in different things of that nature, whether it want to be boycotts or smear campaigns or whatever else. So, you know, you want to get involved economically. Things get really bad, you want to engage in civil warfare, social warfare, where you're civic unrest, where you're doing various different things that go against what's socially acceptable to kind of draw attention to certain things. That's a form of warfare as well. So those are the different things I think of when I think of war, including not doing anything, which is also a form of war that people often don't think about because they think, well, something happens, I got to do something. Well, sometimes not doing anything is more tactically beneficial to what you're trying to do than doing something. For example, if you're in a community that's constantly going through situations, say for example, and I'm just speaking purely metaphorically, so any real world similarities between the situation I'm about to present and what's really happening are purely coincidental. So, say for example, outsiders keep coming in your community and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide that you're going to march and march and rally. And so they do that, and they kill somebody, you march and rally, news shows up, newspapers show up, magazine articles show up, everybody's talking. And then it happens again the next week, and you do the same thing. And this time, the same more people show up, the same media outlets show up, but it's a little bit weaker. And then it happens the third time, and then the fourth time, and the fifth time, and the sixth time, and the seventh time. And by like the 15th time, nobody's even showing up. They don't even care anymore. It's like whatever. The city's bracing for it. Everybody's good to go. Now in that instance, that 16th time it happens, it would probably be more beneficial for the community to just be silent. Not silent in the sense of accepting it, but silent in a sense of doing something where there is no vocalization. There is no nothing. Just to get people wondering, well, why are they silent? What's going on? Why aren't we hearing anything? Why did they break the pattern? You understand what I'm saying?
Right, right.
I'm done. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Nah, it's cool. I mean, to me, and the reason why I want to start there, because this is the area that we are so ignorant in. And this is a real life area of human activity, and we have a small section of our black community who are trained in military science, and we have an even smaller section of that who actually can really logically use military science to actually help us do what we need to do, and we probably got a smaller section of that who actually willing to do that for our community. So this is it, because like this is real. Like war and counter war is real, and like you all both have said, there are many different levels that go to war. And excuse me, in our minds, when it comes to war, we think we automatically go to taking up arms as the first or the only means of warfare. When even that's why I tell people all the time: read Sun Tzu. Any person who have any kind of knowledge of any kind of military strategy will tell you warfare is the last thing you want to do as far as taking up arms. That's the last thing you want to do, but there are many different levels. So now the next area of human activity is sex, and I think I'll start there because I like to talk about sex. No, don't judge me. But one of the reasons is I've been working in. Been working at HIV/AIDS for 7 years. I've actually studied sex, like the science behind sex, for maybe the last 10 years. I got interested in it, and I started studying it. And to me, the way we have sex now is counterproductive to us freeing ourselves. So if we want to talk about finding independence through sex, one of the first things I think we need to do is free ourselves from all other cultural sexual influences, because the things that we're doing sexually that other cultures, that when we're trying to mimic other cultures sexually, and when we're trying to follow other cultures' patterns, and
I hate to interrupt you. Define that. Like, go into a little bit more detail. What you mean by we trying to mimic other cultures sexually?
All right, so white culture is the dominant culture in America, right? And let's say you got a whole generation of young black kids who were raised, who were taught about sex through pornography.
Okay.
Right? And so everybody knows that if you learn sex through the porn industry, you're not going to learn healthy sexual behavior.
What's because, not healthy by anal?
Well, I mean, if you don't know what you're doing, you can mess yourself up. But you know, I mean, and take this account, when you don't know your history, because we don't really know how our ancestors prepared themselves to get into sexual relationships, whether physically, mentally, spiritually, or emotionally, and the way we have sex now is not working for us. Let's just be real. I mean, we have so many people like Pimp C said it. Like couples today, they do nothing but fucking fight. Just fucking fight, right? So like sex at its core is only pleasure, and we're seeking pleasure in so many different ways, and all these different ways, sometimes we're trying to cope with other things, and we're adopting all these other cultural cues and these cultural ideologies, and we're incorporating them into the way we have sex, and it's just created a whole ball of something that's not working for us right now. So I think we need to reevaluate how we have sex. We need to change our social and cultural norms within our community surrounding sex. Change the way we engage into sexual relationships. Change the way we think about sex. Hell, change the way we eat. Like that. Why is sex taboo in our communities? It could be taboo in other people's communities, but it don't have to be taboo in ours. And then, if you want to tie the economic part in it, you know, we are having too many babies in relationships that we cannot take care of. And that's one of the main things. When you have an abundance of babies being aborted, and you have an abundance of babies being adopted, because you have groups of people of in our community who are not ready to be parents, but they are having sex, and they may be having sex. They could be coerced into it because they are being preyed upon by some older person, and that's that person's sexual behavior. Like, sexual deviance is real in our community, and of course people don't like to talk about that, but that's real. It's just, think about the amount of sexual violence that we have in our community. All the ideas and ideologies that we have right now surrounding sex are not working, and I think we need to reverse all that. We need to wipe the slate clean and go back and learn what we used to do culturally, ancestrally, with sex, and see if we can get back to something that's more healthy, that can create more healthy sexual culture. I'm done.
True enough. I'll say my little bit on that. I think when we talk about sex, I look at it more from a relationship, that man-woman relationship in our community and whatnot. That drastically needs to improve. You know, the only time we kind of get along, like you said, is that fucking and fighting. Well, when we not fucking, we got to know how to create that intimacy and that relationship, because those behaviors our children see, that's what we're passing down. So when you talk about, you know, we're not learning that, it's because no one taught it to us. Because I can tell you right now, when I was high school, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I know I wanted to have sex.
Right.
I didn't know the implications it had. I didn't respect the act of sex either. So, because I didn't see that. You know, I grew up in a single-parent household and stuff like that. I never saw the respect for the act. And a lot of what I learned was from Mr. Marcus and the rest of those porn guys. You know?
Exactly.
So, so I never had that type of respect and that education for sex. And it took me getting older, going through failed relationships and understanding that, hey, you know, it's not just about going in there, you know, relieving yourself. There's a lot more to it. And I didn't understand that until actually I met my wife, and that kind of changed my whole aspect of it. So I think a lot of it just goes back to a lot of these kids just don't get that education. So a lot of it just starts at that preteen era of start educating them, not in the fact of, you know, putting on porn and telling them they're just going to get disease, but teaching them how to respect sex, something that should be, you know, strived towards once you get to that maturity level. Like you said, you got a lot of people out here having kids, but they're in terrible relationships. So the kids grow up in a broken home and things of that nature. So to me, I think it's going back to getting a better respect for sex and passing those things along to the next generation.
Correct. Right.
And I'm going to agree with Jamie. And of course, Joe, we talk about sex all the time, on air and off air. So you already know that I agree with what you said. I wanted to blow it up like Jamie did in terms of that particular subject, the sex, in terms of compulsory behavior. I definitely feel like not just the sexual aspect of it, but like Jamie said, the relationship aspect of it, the way men relate to women and the way women relate to men. All of that needs to be adjusted. You know, it really does, because the way we communicate and relate to each other is kind of been thrown off. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I'm going to go back to Chris Brown. He said these hoes ain't loyal. He's like, what, 21, 22 years old when he made that song? What do you know about a hoe? And what do you know about them not being loyal? And like y'all said earlier, why in the hell are you expecting a hoe to be loyal in the first place? Like let's ask these questions when we look at the music and what's being propagated through entertainment. And I know that that's another subject later, but I'm just saying, a lot of that plays real heavy into how we
sexuality,
relate to each other, gender to gender. So, you know, we ask the other questions in terms of, like, men should have the highest form of respect for all women.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the other half of the equation that's needed to perform the only godlike act that humans are capable of performing, the art of creation. Like, creating life is the only godlike act that we can honestly say we have. And it takes two people coming together to do that. If that doesn't, you know, create a level of respect for the opposite sex, you know, then we have cultural issues that really need to be looked at when you think about just the act of it. Like, two bodies are literally becoming one. You're literally sticking a piece of yourself
inside somebody.
Of somebody else. Like, you guys are literally joining bodies. And, you know, I often think, because, you know, I'm a little sick sometimes, so I couldn't imagine. Like, my respect for women started right there. I couldn't imagine what it must be like to have something shoved inside of you. It hurt when I got to take a shit sometimes. So I could only imagine. But, you know, they like it, whatever. But I think as a whole, like Jamie said, we got to look at the way we relate to each other. Like you said, I think a lot of the disrespect in terms of gender-to-gender relationships stem from the fact that we just look at each other as exterior means of masturbation.
You know
what I'm saying? Like, I don't feel like jacking off, so let me use your body because it feels better.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then we don't respect what's happening when you're having sex. You know, and that's evident when we start clowning the dude for getting sprung or clowning the chick for catching feelings or this, that, and the third. Like, all those things are supposed to happen. Like, if you can have regular casual sex with the same person over and over again and not feel anything, you're broken, not them. There's something wrong with you. Because biochemically, your body is secreting hormones and things like that that is supposed to get you addicted to that person. You're supposed to be vibing with them crazy. That's what's supposed to happen. So I just think as a whole, when it comes to sex, gender relationships, sexual intercourse, we need a whole new ground-up, restructured approach when it comes to how we interact with each other and how we fucking each other. Excuse me. How we're making love to each other.
Yeah, we ain't making love. Majority of us ain't making love. It's just period. All right. So the next area of human activity is religion. So we know how. Hey, we from the South. We live in the South. We grew up in the Bible Belt. We know the extent of that. And you know, we smart enough to read. So how can we either free ourselves from religion or be able to use religion to create an independent Black community?
I'll let Pat get that one first. Pat's been holding back.
Hold on. I done went first before, right?
Nah. Go ahead and get it. You already been picked.
Oh,
You've
you
been
know
chosen.
What? It looked like Professor Carl Tone Jones
did. Yeah, right on time. That's messed up.
Did y'all fuck me up?
You just popped up at the right time, so Pat decided I'm going to defer to you, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. What did I miss?
We just got to talk about sex, but you know.
Okay.
Professor, we I talked to you earlier, and I know Joe did. We're going over the vision for a Black community, and we were actually in the process of very shallowly touching on all 9 areas of compulsory behavior, as illustrated by Dr. Neely Fuller. And so we know, and we've already said, you're going to be your documentary going into the vision of what an independent Black community will look like is going to be digging very, very deep into all of these areas. So we're just touching on them very, very briefly. So we were actually talking about religion, and both Jamie and Joe tried to throw me under the bus.
Whatever.
And put that bitch in full drive. So
he didn't want to answer the question, and you popped up.
Because religion is one of them topics that
Man, y'all know we ain't using religion the way we supposed to. Y'all know the current religious systems right now, the current way that we think and use religion is not helping us. We know that.
Right. But, see, I just wanted to give y'all a chance to elaborate, and I feel like y'all didn't take it, and it was very cowardly the way y'all backed out of it and tried to bring the professor up. But since you're on, Professor, you know, we want to give you a chance to speak on it.
Well, before the professor goes deep into it, I want to allow him to reintroduce himself to the audience and tell the audience about the Independence Day Project.
Okay. Peace, family. My name is, as I sit in my old man's office chair, settling in, that's how they call it. My name is Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I am the director and creator of the program What About Us, and the actual innuendo behind me creating that particular project, plan, organization, however you want to call it, is to create awareness in our community, to bridge gaps, to help people network, and to also, you know, create a vision or idea about, you know, what black empowerment truly is. Now, the Independence Day Project is more so an extension of that, because when we look at our situation and we look at our conditioning, our position in the world is not getting better. In fact, we are, you know, regressing in terms of influence, in terms of social obligation and responsibility, in terms of, you know, just being respected as a group of people. We don't have human rights. We don't have civil rights. We don't have any rights that anybody globally, you know, are that they're duty-bound to respect. So we have to, you know, look at our position in the world and, you know, create a situation when we are no longer dependent on these groups, these organizations, these other types of these other races of people who pretty much look at the black community as a stepping stone, who pretty much look at the black community as you know, irrelevant, violent, you know, all the propaganda, but for the most part, who looks at our community as expendable, you know, expendable. We're expendable to the point where we can be killed and there's nothing, you know, nothing being done about it. In fact, the killers themselves are, you know, they see a career in this. They see some sort of ambition in this. They see something to gain from our detriment when it comes to those types of situations. So the Independence Day Project is basically about creating a situation for black people to break free of the chains of white supremacy, to break free from being looked at and being treated as a permanent underclass, for us to be able to place our stake not just here in America but in the world as a group of people who are on code and who are working together and who consolidate their effort, their energy, their monies, and whatever clout we have to the betterment of the black community. And I see that as something that can be done within our lifetime if we're focused and if we get the right type of people on board.
Okay.
Boom.
Bada boom, bada boom.
Ma-effing.
Yeah. And I mean, Professor,
yes,
we want to introduce you to our new co-host, Mr. Jamie Busham. He is on the show and he's part of the train now. So, Jamie, this is the Professor, this is Jamie.
How you doing, Professor?
Hey, a pleasure to meet you, beloved. Much obliged.
Y'all actually talked before on social media.
Yeah.
Oh, word.
I don't remember, do you?
Depends on. it depends on how long ago it was.
It was, I don't know how long ago it was. Jamie made a post, and I tagged you in it, and you commented, and then y'all had like a two-post exchange, and that was it. But I remember, because I was like, I didn't even know he could see this, because Professor and Jamie ain't friends. But you did see it, and you commented, and he commented, and then it was like,
yeah. Hey man. Hey.
Play me like this.
Hey man. Hey. I feel you. If anybody feel you, I feel you.
So that's what's up. That's what's
yes,
up.
Yes, sir. So the religion, the topic of religion, that's one of the nine areas of human activity. Professor, in your opinion, how can we use this area, or what do we have to do surrounding religion to basically get to the independence that we need?
I think in particular to our situation, we need to put religion on the back burner in regards to black empowerment. You look at every other community, and see, religion just plays a part in this. Whether it be religion, whether it be a social caste, whether it be political clout, whatever, whether it be a professional title, we ourselves, we abandon being black in lieu of being all these other things. So when you talk to somebody who is not black and you ask them who they are, the first thing they're going to tell you is either they're going to tell you their ethnicity or they're going to tell you their race. That's the first thing they're going to tell you when you ask them to describe who they are. But when you ask people in our community what they are, we ascribe to titles. We ascribe to being part of groups. We ascribe to whatever our religious affliction is. And I think that that in itself is a detriment, because you were black before you were any of those things. But being black has become, identifying with being black is seen as, you know, heresy in our community. So people try to distance themselves. Our people try to distance themselves from being black, and we hide under all these other veils, whether it's a Christian, whether it's a Muslim, whether, you know, it's a 5%er, whether, you know, it's one of these other groups, you know, that people cling on to. And I'm not saying anybody shouldn't be a part of religion. You know, the spirituality aspect and all the religious stories take root in the place we call home, Africa. Africa birthed all of these religions, especially the three main religions, quote-unquote, around the world, you know, the Abrahamic religions. So that wouldn't be a necessary problem. I think the problem more so is the fact that we lose our connection to Africa. We lose our connection to being black once we join these particular religions, and nobody else does this. A white supremacist would sooner worship the devil rather than be anything but white. Feel me?
Right.
They put, you know, or they'll kill you in God's name because, you know, it's blasphemy for anybody to go against the religion of white supremacy. So we have to start looking at the fact that, for one, I think the fact that we're taught not to question our religion and we don't do any research about the religion, then you would see all the different things that are tied to those religions that are contradictory to the way they've been practiced. And me and Patrick have had this conversation a lot. It's amazing how, you know, when we talk about specifically Christianity, that Christians all around the world will read that book, but black Christians seem to get a different message than anybody else from that book. It's one of obedience. It's one of submission. Everybody else is empowered by their Christianity. They going on crusades. They've conquered lands. You know, if you don't convert to Christianity, we'll just kill you and call you, say what you're doing is blasphemous, or call you pagan, you know, and not really look into the fact that, you know, modern-day Christianity is all based on pagan practices and rituals.
Right.
So if you're looking at those things, if you're looking at the celebration of Christmas, and you're looking at the celebration of Easter, you know, and you look at Esther, and then you look at the Christmas tree, and you know, all those different things are based on pagan rituals. Which, by the way, if the Christians did any research, you know, they're two of the bloodiest days of the year. Pagan sacrifices take place on those days, but in the name of Christianity. But to look at how our community needs to there was a time when the church was the place that we went to. It just wasn't a building for worship. It was where we met. It was where we planned. It was where we housed people, you know, specifically during the Civil Rights Movement. It was where black people found refuge. It fed the community. It was more than what it's become. And because it's become, because it's become bastardized now, more so than ever, and it works within the conjunction of the government, and now that they have to claim nonprofit status in a lot of these places, they've eliminated all those different things from most of these churches nowadays. The majority of churches now are pretty much just, you know, they're very nice places to go. They're the nicest buildings in your community. I've often said this about the church, not just the church, but the two most thriving businesses in the black community are your bars and your churches. And neither one of them beautify anything else but their particular spaces. Neither one of them do anything to empower anybody, but they had both have something to draw you back. One has a vice. I guess they're both vices, aren't they? And the other one has faith, has your faith. And they are able to draw you back because, for one, people can't let go of their vices or addiction. So they go to the bar. Bar profits off of that. Bar sees no reason to change that because, you know, it goes against their best interest. And then you have the church. And the church, you know, gets the people drunk on God and tells you that, you know, your tithing and all that is tenets to God. So do you want to disrespect God? Do you want to piss God off? Your life is bad enough. You need to feel God's wrath? And, you know, it's a nice little game, and it works.
Oh, yeah. Professor.
Yes, sir.
Before you give away all of your secrets, I need to ask you one question to make sure that I heard you right.
Okay.
Did you say religious afflictions?
Yes, sir.
Oh, so you said that on purpose?
Yes.
I'm like, my sister, did he just call being religious an affliction? An affliction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay. Man, I look at it like this. We are so supportive of religion. We are so caught up in religion. Like, black people will do any and everything in the name of a religion except improve your position in the world. Because to me, it seems like it's a part of the programming that's keeping us doing things that's not going to help us improve our position in the world. I mean, we literally separate ourselves. You know, people use that, well, we can't get with uneven yoke. For we all black. We all the same yoke. We black. Like, we got like the professor said, like, what happened to being black first? Like, whatever religious path, and I do agree that right as of right now, because we don't seem like we understand how to really use it anyway. So let's put religion to the side and focus on being black first right now, you know. But I'm gonna let others talk though.
And my thing is, when entering the realm of having these conversations about politics, about any topic, you got to leave your religion at the door. Because people, you know, when it comes to different arenas, they're not voting based on what Christ taught them. They're voting based on what they want to get ahead in, or they're doing this because it's going to advantage them. They know how to put their religion on the back burner. You can't tell me I'm a devout Christian and you voting for this person, or you with this type of line of thinking. No, they put that religion on the back burner, do what they have to do to get ahead, and when they go to church on Sunday, they can be whoever they want to be. And I think the black community, we got to understand that. When we enter these realms of things, we have to know how to put our religion to the side, because sometimes having that stance or that it can hold us back from getting to where we need to be. And my views on religion, I mean, that's a topic that's so deep, and we could spend 2 hours just speaking on religion in itself. But just for the average, you know, the black community, we just kind of got to be honest with ourselves and stop getting sold on hope, because that's what the church essentially sells, hope. You know, they beat you up Monday through Friday, beat you down maybe Saturday too. Then you go in there and you're all revived and you're fresh because you got some good words. And you can do that for yourself. I mean, God doesn't need a cathedral for you to go praise him in. He doesn't. So all this money we're flowing into these, right here in Dallas, Texas, I can show you Dallas Carter High School. This place looks like Eastside High School. I'm not even joking. One of the worst high schools I've ever been to in my life. But you go right across the street, you see a mega church twice the size of that high school. And a lot of people are like, well, that's the church, this and other. That school is like the only major school in that community. You would think the money and the resources of that community would be going to educate those young people to come back and revive that community. No, it's going right there to the church. What is the church doing with that? Building more buildings, building this. So I don't want to pick on the black church, and I'm not going to criticize them too heavily. But black people, we got to be honest with ourselves. And like I said, leave that religion at the door, and let's just address the issues as they are in reality. That's it. Without pissing off too many people and going to hell.
Forget them.
I will pick on them directly, indirectly, and every other Lee that they need, because they need it. But my thing with religion is simple. Anything you choose to believe needs to be empowering and beneficial for your people. If it's not, you need to throw it away. It's just that simple for me. So, and if we all have that belief, then, you know, that's basically acknowledging that we're black first. You know, we're black Americans first. And when other communities, culture groups, religious groups, or whatever come into our community to oppress us, they're not going to ask you if you're a Christian, if you're a they're not going to ask you which one of the 30,000 denominations of Christianity you are, whether you're a Church of Holiness or a Church of Christ or whatever else you want to be. That's a black nigga. Bang, bang. You know, y'all read out the same Bible for the most part anyway. So for me, as long as whatever you believe is empowering to the community, then fucking believe it, because that's not going to conflict with any sort of community empowerment meetings or messages we might have. And if you honestly want to believe in Christianity, then you need to read your book, because your book is very empowering. Not what you learn in that church, not the dogma, not what your preacher giving you. That book itself, I've read it, I know. That book is very empowering. That book tells you to move. It tells you to do stuff. It tells you not to be patient. It tells you not to wait. It tells you to learn and take action. You know, all of those scriptures in there about blessing people that take action and punishing people that don't do shit. Read the book. If you're a Christian, read the goddamn book. I'm sorry. That was wrong with me.
And just one thing, just like the other day, I was, I forget where I was at, but I was in downtown Dallas, and I know you guys probably ran into him, but the Israelite guys, my black Israelite brothers. Dude runs up on me, he gang hustles me, he's spitting all this stuff. Oh, you're not an African, you're one of the tribes, this, that, and the other. And I proposed a simple question to the brother. I said, before there was a man called Abraham or any of that, Moses, whatever, what were you? And you couldn't answer it. So I'm like, your religion is telling you, it's like before religion even came to existence, you were a black man. That's who you were. And I think the professor alluded to that. Before all of that stuff you subscribe to, what are you? You're a black person. Let's stick with that, and let's see where that takes us.
And that itself digs into a deeper discussion, because we have been taught for centuries to hate who we are so much that we're sitting here looking for other things to be, to clamor onto.
Right.
Looking for other parts of society to love us. And I mean, look at what's happening all around the country. When you see the first time when somebody gets shot, y'all just had a brother down there in Charlotte, his name was Keith Scott, right? Now, of course, not too many people are talking about him because, you know, you had a football game, you had a couple TV shows pop up, and, you know, our attention span is that short when it comes to us being killed and murdered anymore. But when you look at the response is always to boycott this, to boycott that. And you don't boycott things that you need to abstain from. And furthermore, when you talk about our reaction to all these different things, it's like we really don't, as a community, have a real plan or understanding of white supremacy and a plan of how to deal with it. That's really the reason behind the Independence Day Project, is to provide a picture of what our community looks like forget white people, forget the white community, forget white supremacy. We're going to eliminate all those things in this vision. Now, what does the black community look like? You know, you talk to people who have who are clamoring around all these different parts of society. It's because they themselves don't want to be black, don't want to be identified with being black.
Yes.
This movement itself, 99% of the people that are involved treat it like a hobby. This is why you hear people that are so outraged and so upset, is because when something goes wrong with your hobby, say if my football team doesn't win a football game, I might be depressed all week because I've invested so much of my attention into it. But that's not going to stop me from going to my 9-to-5. I'm still going to work. Far too many people who become vested in this treat it like a hobby. And this is why we don't see results. Because a hobby is something you're interested in. It's not something that you live by. It's not a code of conduct that describes your relationship to the world. If you are truly about black empowerment, then I don't even tell you to buy black. You're already doing it.
If you're
about black empowerment, I don't need to tell you that your religion comes second, because I'm not going to let Muslims off the hook either. You know?
Oh, no.
Because when Muslims come in contact with those Arabs and they go into those foreign countries, they get to see just how much love is spread across, you know.
exactly.
You know, across, you know, you get to see just how much love is not there. And you get to see how many Africans they actually have still enslaved to this day that we don't talk about. So when you talk about being black, though, it's not something you're ashamed to do. You're unapologetic about it. If this is not a hobby. You know, I understand the chess game that has to be played, but then you can still recognize who's about this life and who's not. And that's why so many of us don't have a solution, because, yeah, it's easy to say boycott something. But
right.
When you talk about investing, well, that means I got to take money out of my pocket and put it into something. I have to take time out of my schedule and add it to something. I have to actually put my neck on the line, and you know what? They might come across with a hatchet, and they might chop my neck off. But, you know, so we don't have enough people like that. And I'm not talking about on the front lines going out there all guns blazing, because that's just silly. What I'm talking about is people who will actually stand behind true black empowerment, institution building, people who will go about their business of making sure that to create what they don't see in their community today, tomorrow. So we don't see the co-ops in our community. Well, let's go out here and pound and let's try to make that happen. Let's not be so happy about the political process when it doesn't matter who gets elected. None of them have an obligation to us. So we're either going to get Donald Trump's death with a swift, cut of the sword and chops our head off, or you're going to get Hillary Clinton's death by 1,000 cuts. You know, either way, you're going to die from it. Neither one of them about healing the black community. And, you know, just like when the Democratic Convention released that, or somebody released that memo from the Democratic Convention, was basically said, if you run across anybody in the black community that has any questions about their solutions, don't give them any answers. That's the system. That's been the plan of benign neglect since the 60s and the 70s. So, basically don't offer black people anything. And black people will just try to fit in and try to clamor about, which is why you have so many black people right now truly happy that Michelle Obama gave George Bush a hug at the opening of the National Black Historical Museum. And now they're hashtagging it Brown Sugar Love with any other. I mean, this is how we ourselves see our place in the world.
That's a joke.
It's sad and depressing, because what it speaks to, and these are the so-called learned Negroes. These are the so-called Negroes with college degrees. These are the so-called Negroes that are politically inclined. And these are the same ones who have no true clue in terms of what black empowerment truly means, or they're full-out sellouts. One or the other, we don't need them. But the bad part about it is they have the ears of most of our community right now. You know, they'll tune into TV1 and look, and this is why when we start talking about politics and things of that nature, most of the community can't relate. But if you start talking about this so-called gender war, everybody wants to chime in. You know, our community, conscious community, is based in gossip, or everybody else's conscious community is based on what can we do to better and strengthen our position in the world. And
you know
we
what,
have
Professor,
to start dealing with those things. Yes, sir.
You actually jumped us right into the next point, which was politics.
Right. Because we really don't understand that.
No, and when we think about politics, from the compulsory behavioral standpoint, that's not just understanding what's going on politically, but that's also in the way we interact with each other, what's politically correct, what's not, you know, social norms, things of that nature, all things that are involved with the politics of a situation. Oh, you know, we can't say faggot anymore because it's not politically correct. If the politics of our current social climate don't permit that sort of language. Kind of like, as a black person, you can't say I only date black people because, you know, that's not politically correct. The politics of our current situation don't permit that. So, you know, I just thought it was interesting that, you know, you were talking. And that shows, I guess, how much you've been thinking about your project and everything else, that you would immediately roll the conversation right into the next subject, which is politics. So, you know what? If the studio audience wasn't slipping on their shit, they would give you a round of applause right now.
Hey, man, Pat, you need to get your audience together then, Pat.
That's your audience, man.
Guess what? Hey, here you go. Here you go. They just for you.
Audience still somewhere talking about sex.
See, they need to get their mind out the gutter.
With politics, though, I think a lot of times a lot of people put a lot of hope into it. Like, when it comes to presidential elections, we think, all right, we vote, this is going to right the ship, and they put a lot of hope. Well, the hope from a politician's tongue has never trickled down to our level. So I think a lot of people, voting is important, being active in, you know, the political process, taking part in your democracy, that's important. You definitely want to do that. But don't think just because you put, you know, a two-term president that looks like you in the White House, mean everything's going to change for you, and that's solely on his shoulders at that point. And I think a lot of people, that's how they view the political process. Let me cast my vote, and everything going to work out in my favor because I voted for somebody that's going to look out for my best interest. When as soon as that person gets in the office, they forget that you even voted for them. Yeah, they don't even worry about that part of the constituency because they got other people to focus on. So I think a lot of times, yes, you want to participate, but they put everything into voting as if it's going to change everything, where I don't care who's in the White House, the status quo is always going to be maintained until somebody gets in there and changes it, which hasn't happened in how long. Other than a few key social issues, the status quo is still the same.
Well, yeah. One of the things that we have to understand about the whole political process and is on several different tiers. If we're talking about our engagement in the political process, we have to first start to understand our own politics within our community. We have to understand racial politics. And that's something we don't understand at all as black people. Mm. Nobody goes against the will or the betterment of their community but black people. Black people live on this false narrative of morality, all right, being morally correct in terms of dealing with issues, but they're only morally correct when these issues cross racial boundaries. Let me give you an idea of it. If in my community, I see somebody on my corner shoot somebody, the morally correct thing to do is to turn that person into law enforcement, morally speaking. But we won't do that as a community because, you know, that goes against the code. Don't snitch, right?
Right.
Now, if somebody black gets into a confrontation with somebody who's not black, specifically if somebody white or European, and there are black witnesses, often you will see that the black witnesses will come forth and go against the same stop snitching code. They'll go against this code to you know, identify the assailant, one of the assailants, as being a black man. You know, that's not understanding racial politics, because white witnesses who may be there, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to do anything that's going to indict that white person, because it goes against the code of protecting their community.
Yeah.
So first we have to understand that, and that's not just the debt, that's when we've been wronged in public. When you see that you have to argue with your people to understand that Trayvon Martin was not in the wrong the night George Zimmerman decided to, you know, stalk him and then murder him on the street in cold blood. When you have people in your community that will say that Jordan Davis should have turned down the music and the radio, you know, that night that he was killed by Michael Dunn, just sitting in the parking lot, minding his own business before Michael Dunn said anything to him. You know, you have to convince your own people to say, because what you'll have people say is, and this is a coward's way out, by the way, you know, I'm all about, you know, being, you know, universal law and just being right and righteousness. But that righteousness never comes into play when it's about bettering your community. So we have to understand racial politics for what it is. Nobody else speaks out against their community. No Korean spoke out against Peter Lane when he shot that brother in Brooklyn coming down the street. In fact, the Koreans, the same Asians that you go, the people that black people go to in their beauty supply stores or their little rinky-dink Chinese restaurants with 3-inch steel, plastic, 3-inch glass that's up there so that you can't actually physically hand a person your money while you're receiving your food. They all went out in New York and protested and said two wrongs don't make a right, and made sure that Peter Lang didn't have to face any jail time for killing that brother in cold blood. So, you know, no other community will speak out against their own. As wrong as George Zimmerman was, no Latinos or whites came out in public and admonished the court system for allowing that man to get away with murder. In our community, though, we would have done that. And that's the problem with not understanding racial politics. And that's also the problem with not understanding or not being brave enough to speak truth to power, no matter who that power might be.
That's
so
true.
We have to first understand those things. And then when you take the step into understanding, you know, the actual political arena, we always show up with a vote, and like said brother earlier, you know, we hope and wish some things will happen. Everybody else shows up with a bucket of money or a bag of money.
Exactly.
And a suitcase full of demands. And if these demands get met, you get the money, and forget the votes. You don't even need our votes. But you get the money, so you can run your campaign. We show up, people who are not obliged to us, you know, and we offer them all of our support. We never make anybody earn anything, which speaks to the fact that as black people in America, we want to do anything we can to step outside of being seen as black to everybody else. We're not happy with being black. We're so mad about being black that we don't care about each other. We don't care about ourselves. So when you deal with, when you're dealing in politics and you're trying to step away from being black, of course you're not going to care about a cause that you're not affiliated with, excuse me, that you're trying to remove your affiliation from. So these are the issues that we need to address as a community. Now, as we speak in terms of the Independence Day Project, there's not going to be anybody elected from us that doesn't have our best interests. Why? Because we're going to have our own lobby. You know, we're not going to do the Wish Foundation thing where we wish this policy would go where we wish, you know, we hope this will help us. No. We're going to be a collective force. And we don't even need to create a new political party. We're going to attempt the parties that are out there. But if you want our vote, then we need to see this. We know you don't have our interests at heart. We know you don't care about us. But you want this money. And this large sum of money that we have is tied into these documents that says this particular amount of land is going to be allotted to blacks born in America so that we can do what we need to on it. We're not going to have to deal with any of the red tape. You're going to have to work through all the different issues. And on top of that, you are going to help us by making sure that some of these things are tax exempt. And not only are they tax exempt, we're going to be, you know, put in a position where our children will be provided for because of the institutions we plan on doing with these particular policies that are put in place. And if you don't, and if you forfeit on it, just remember, 2 years from now, we're going to give this same bit of money to somebody else who will follow through.
And to that, we have to understand, like what the professor's saying, you know, I stand behind wholeheartedly in terms of dictating who our politicians are going to be, dictating what laws they're going to put in place, because, you know, he hinted at it, but I'm going to say it a lot more directly. We need to be writing our own laws and policies, period.
Right.
Don't go to them and say, this is what we want to see. No, we got what we want to see. We wrote it. We know what's in it. We don't need no other groups writing for us, telling us what we want. No, this is what we want. We wrote it. We need you to, you know what I'm saying? Which one of y'all politicians are going to give us the most out of this package?
Not to cut you off, I said like this. Other groups of people understand that we don't have our politics together. That's why they think that they can invite themselves to the table to basically help black people work on their own issues.
But we don't. I mean, fact of the matter is, even when we start talking about elections, black people as a community will clamor and clamor and clamor to vote on a presidential election without realizing that that is probably the least important election that a local that a local person can vote in terms of impacting their community. The president, leader of the free world, most powerful man in the world, blah, 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 blah. When it comes to impacting your daily life, your city commissioners have more power than the president does. Your school board has more power than the president does when it comes to impacting your daily life. So if you want, you know, if you want something fixed locally, the president, not only is he not going to do it, he's not going to care to do it. You need to talk to your mayors, your governors, your city commissioners, your school board officials, your county prosecutors, your all of those other local elected officials that we don't pay no attention to. You know, those same motherfuckers who dictate basically all of the rules for the major parties that we love to hate on, you know, those same people, like, get involved locally. That's what understanding politics means. I don't care who's running the country because, and we should have learned this lesson from Obama. Congress can dictate. If I control Congress, you can have whoever the fuck you want in the White House. I don't give a shit. I control Congress. I can make his life a living hell. Because he's nothing but a glorified executive. Congress is like the board of directors. The president is like the CEO. Guess what? The board of directors have more power than the CEO to influence the organization as a whole. Guess what else? The board of directors can fire the CEO.
That's why I laugh when they say the most powerful position in the world. I like, what's the big guy, the board of directors? What the hell you mean?
I mean, it's the most powerful single office in the world. But Congress overrides that position. They can fire him. And that's what we need to understand about local politics as well. If you live in an incorporated municipality, you can fire your politicians too.
Yep. Yep.
You don't have to let them serve full term. And that's when we understand politics, because we understand there's levels to it. There's poor man politics and rich man politics. Both can get things done, but they require different routes, different levels of energy. Poor man politics, which is what we need to play until we can get the rich man's level, is, all right, look here, official. You need 20,000 votes to beat your opponent. It's 30,000 of us. We will all come out and vote for you if you give us this. If you don't give us this, we will all come out and vote to have you fired in the middle of your term. So, what you want to do? And then you move forward. You keep doing that until you get a situation in place where you have the money to go up to a politician and say, look, we got $30,000. That might not sound like a lot, but for somebody running for city commissioner, that's a shitload of money.
That's a lot of money.
You know, we got $100,000. We got $150,000. You get to the point where now, look here, Governor. We got $4 million, and this is what we need. You know what I'm saying? State senator, we got $10 million. This is what we need. We don't even have to get to the president. We don't give a fuck about him.
Hey. True. Politics, y'all. I hope y'all taking notes.
I know you could. On too, and this is gonna be a two-part series.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just giving you a time check, Joseph.
Oh man, hey man. We own it, but
I know you be getting excited, and then your upper lip starts sweating.
Hey man. Trying to be the best, B. You know what I'm saying? But as you stated, this is gonna be a two-part series, so we will be back next week with the professor. Talk about the other five areas of human activity, which will be law, labor, entertainment, education, and economics, as they all pertain to black people gaining our independence, becoming the independent black community, and it's all surrounding Professor Carl Tones Jones. This is his new documentary coming out, The Independence Day Project. If you don't mind, Professor, if this is information that you want to give, can you give kind of our audience an idea of some of the people that are going to be in the documentary?
Okay, yeah. Well, of course, you two brothers will be in it. You know, Patrick, you and Brother Joe, you guys will definitely going to be in the project.
I'm in the project?
You're in the project, beloved.
We in the project.
I'm famous.
we have some power players out of the New York metropolitan area that are going to be involved. We have Brother Mastermind, Born Allah, and his queen, E-Queen. You know, they run a powerful program out of Paterson, New Jersey. And give me a second, I can just pull their program up. But basically, their program is about black independence and our independence from this system of white supremacy. And it's all about empowering people within the community. So we have him. We also have Brother Aki Tayemba and Brother Aki. You know, has written several books in regards to black empowerment. He's a strong community organizer out in Harlem. They do the Harlem Liberation School out in, the spot's called Raw Space in Harlem. So it's right off of Lenox. And actually, I think it's on Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard, and they do a lot of things. In fact, we're going to be doing some work there come February, where we introduce, hopefully, the finished product of the Independence Day Project. So keep that on the lookout, because we have some things going on in Harlem. We have Brother Ron Bethea, who is also a community activist, and this brother is just a master communicator. He's able to network with a lot of different people in the New York area. We have the brother Q Butter. He's also in the project, and he runs Zyx, the Zyx Entertainment. Zyx, this brother does so much. Out of one building, you have a classroom to where they all offer black empowerment, but also GED. Certification programs, so people who don't have their high school diploma can get their GED from this particular program. You also have, he also is a record producer, but he's also a brother who puts together workshops and classes. You know, he had to build us for the conference, where you have people from the community come out, meet and greet, but also address several issues that were important to the community. He had Left Field, then he had Educating Us, which pretty much talked about alternative methods to the Europeanized system of schooling that we're dealing with here in America. And it's all about black empowerment. You have here in Philadelphia, a radio host who is generous enough to offer me some time once a month, every Sunday, once a month, the first Sunday of every month on 900 AM WRDM Philadelphia, Dave Barnes, who's been, you know, allowing for his platform to be used for black empowerment for the last some odd years, I think the last 10, 15 years. So, you know, we also have some sisters on board. I have a sister, and her name is Angie. I'll give you a screen name, Angie Teach Knowledge, you know, Teachnology. And she is an assistant principal at a school here in Philadelphia. And she's a sister who is big on black empowerment, but she's also big on, you know, eating healthy, organic living. And those are some things we don't talk about. We don't talk about that enough. So she's going to be part of the project. And we also have a sister out in California, Kara Poole. And Kara is a.k.a. Kay Lachey. She also hosts the radio show every Wednesday with the Source Radio Network. And in addition to that, you know, she runs this program called The Great Griot, which is a video web series, and it depicts specific issues, items, people in our history, and it takes a critical look at it. And I mean, this sister, you know, we've already done the recording, and she's just a powerful sister to be able to see on screen and to be able to articulate some of the points about what we need to do as a community and what black independence looks like to her. It's just inspiring. It's an inspiring group of people. And we have some others who may or may not be in the project. So for the most part, we also have a sister right out of y'all backwoods. Backyard. Sorry.
These woods.
Florida. Yeah, Monique. You know, sister, you know, Monique is going to be on board, you know, and Monique is very, very, she's very well-versed, and she's a staunch historian, and this sister will do her research on anything. So, you know, we have some real strong people. They're not necessarily people who you have seen or received the limelight, because in my opinion, we've already heard them. They've already said their piece about what, you know, black empowerment is. Now we want to take it to the next stage. We want to change the conversation from identifying white supremacy. If you need for somebody to identify white supremacy at this point, you're just not paying attention. You know, how it works and what it is. You're just not paying attention. So we're talking now that next stage of providing that vision of what black independence looks like, you know, our independence, and we're going to start a new crowdfund. Hopefully we'll have it up, a crowdfund within the next 2 weeks. But we're going to actually hopefully have the teaser out as we plan to launch this crowdfund in the next week or so. So be on the lookout for that as well, to know where we ask the people that are on the panel, what does black independence look like to you? And we're going to put that montage together, and we're going to put it out there. And hopefully it's something that will generate interest. Don't forget to hashtag Black Independence or Die. That's hashtag Black Independence or Die, or hashtag the Independence Day, you know, Project Independence, hashtag Project Independence. So either one of those two hashtags, you know, Black Independence or Die, or hashtag Project Independence to keep up with the project. And as always, you can check for updates at the What About Us website at www.wauwhataboutus.com, www.wauwhataboutus.com. So, and I thank you, brothers, for, you know, bringing light to this topic, and hopefully, you know, we'll get some more traction, and I definitely look forward to part two, where we can really get into the meat of what it is, black independence, and to dig in those other five areas that we haven't talked about, because there's so much there that, you know, I'm not even sure we're going to be able to get this done in one movie.
Right. Hey, we ready. We ready, man. I'm excited because this is something that we haven't seen in a documentary style, as far as painting that picture of our independence and getting that idea of our independence out. So, I mean, I'm excited. It's gonna be cool, man. It's gonna be cool. So, and where can people reach you again?
You go to my website, www.wauwhataboutus.com. That's www.wauwhataboutus.com. You can also just find me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or Google Plus. Just go to Google and search Carl Tone Jones. If you go to Google and search Carl Tone Jones, I'm the only one on the planet. So I'm not hard to find, and you'll be able to follow the project. You'll be able to follow me. Some of the lectures that I've been a part of at Black and Nobel Bookstore here in Philadelphia, as well as some of the things that I've been doing in New York, some of the other things I've been doing around the city here in Philly, and hopefully we'll people will be able to see that, you know, this has been some consistent work. You know, we put together some successful projects, you know, from the prospect of What About Us. We put together a book reading drive, a book reading initiative that was able to raise and give away, you know, somewhat of $1,000. Now, it was small in scale, but the bottom line is we encouraged black children to read books about black empowerment. And this is something that we need to be on. You know, we need to be on black empowerment. We also need to have a real plan and a real look at where we are. And as a people and as a community, we are on the fringes of going through a Holocaust, not just saying that our experience in here hasn't been a Holocaust, but experiencing, you know, the more violent parts of a Holocaust if we don't start looking at what's happening to us. War has been declared on the black community, and it doesn't make a difference if we cover our eyes and pretend like it's not happening to us. They are tearing us apart limb by limb. And we have to start putting in plans to protect ourselves, and that's the real reason for the Independence Day Project, because I'm not about survival. I heard what Killer Mike said the other day, and that's great if you just want to survive. Yes, we're going to need some of those skills, but we also need to be able to empower ourselves to be independent of a system and self-reliant, whereas though we don't have to worry about everybody knowing how to fish or everybody knowing how to farm. As long as we have people in place to do those things, then we're good as a community. What we have to worry about is being able to protect those things. And unlike the Black Wall Streets of those areas, we're not going to be isolated from the rest of the black community. We're going to be, when we finish this Independence Day Project and we see this vision through, it's going to be about other people trying to mimic what we're doing because it's going to be so successful. So I have all the confidence in the world that we're going to see this within our lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Power to the people.
People
no
to the power.
Hey, man, this is what it's all about. It's about us doing what we need to do for self and getting where we need to go, but putting the ideas out there, putting the vision out there, and then working toward getting that vision. So that's what's up with the Independence Day Project. Jamie.
What's happening, boss?
Hey, I guess you passed the test. You down with the click. You cool, man. You cool. You came in about the thunder, so you know.
Man, I really appreciate the opportunity, just getting out of talking. I really appreciate all the perspectives you guys gave. Professor, you gave some real good knowledge, some real good information a lot of people can take back and chew on. I know I wrote down a few things of what you said, and I want to go back and look up myself. So I really like the, you know, how this is set up. I like being a part of it, and I'm excited, guys, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're back next week, then. Really going down.
Yeah, and you can go ahead and tell your peoples that we normally don't run an hour and a half, so get off your back a little bit. Ride out. Look, you know, I know how it could be sometimes. I know how it could be, trust me.
They be rolling their eyes at you standing at the door.
You still on the show?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still on the show. Jesus Christ, give me a break. We'll be off the show in a minute. You know it don't normally run this long.
Hey.
You doing good stuff.
Hey.
Why don't you go eat an apple?
Hey, with that being said, you know, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. He's Jamie Busham, and shout out to Professor Carl Tone Jones for being on the train with us today. We are your community resource podcast series, and remember, our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our community members to help uplift and empower our communities. And the Freedom Train is sponsored by PACS Inc. That's PACTSINC, and PACS Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on economics and education with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And I don't usually say this in this part, but remember, go to WAUWhataboutUs.com and check out all the professors' information. And make sure you visit PACS Inc.'s website at www.pactsinc.org. And make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain. And subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on Google Play Music and iTunes. And I feel good every time I say that. So Google Play Music and iTunes. But not just that, because we're coming up and we're expanding. And sooner or later, Jamie going to have his own show busting y'all in the head with information. So
easy,
y'all better.
Easy.
You know what I'm saying?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
With that being said, people, you know how we do. Two fingers up like a player. We split them apart. We'll see you later. Peace out.